Death is as sweet as sugared seaweed. I see how the sea flows like blood, a threading of blue veins beneath white skin. The sea. Anamalan has this brutal, direct, simple language. And instead of a sympathetic friend, a sympathetic witness, or a mirror, the sea is an unfriendly, even malevolent force that is luring the narrator to her death. And this is her poetic debut. She just shows up on the scene in her early 20s and completely upends centuries of tradition. It's brave work.
Fire Coral, from Faroese writer Anamalan Yaxvandóttir, as read with commentary by author-translator Matthew Landrum. It's a poem which 13 translators prepared, including the English translation just published to Asymptote's Spring 2024 issue, The Midnight Garden. What will you find in The Midnight Garden? Well, this issue has a special feature section of Faroese writers alongside new work from 32 countries with the author's works in English translation. The Faroes are an archipelago of small islands northwest of Shetland, southeast of Iceland, and surrounded by the North Atlantic Ocean. It would not be an understatement to say that a renaissance of contemporary poetry and short fiction is represented within the work of the 9 authors published to this feature section of the journal. In this episode, we will visit with translator Matthew Landrum, author of Berlin Poems, a Midsummer Night's Press 2019, in conversation about Yaxvandóttir and how her work breaks sharply from the ballad tradition of poetics on the islands. I'm Vincent Hostack, and this is the Asymptote Podcast. Let's begin. Thank you, Matthew Landrum, for joining us today for this conversation.
It's a pleasure to be here. Asymptote published my first foray into Faroese translation 12 years ago, and I'm so happy to have work in the recent Faroese feature.
So before we begin a conversation about the poem, perhaps a level setting would be helpful. I'm thinking there's a probability that some, if not many, of our English-speaking listeners know little about the Faroes, geographically, culturally, and certainly in relation to the region's language. Can you help set the stage?
The Faroes are a tiny archipelago of 17 islands located between Iceland and northern Scotland. The closest other land is the Shetland Islands, about 220 miles away. They're an autonomous region within Denmark. They view themselves as their own nation, and they have a language that has common roots with Icelandic, really common roots with all the Scandinavian languages. It is certainly a distinctive language. They look to Iceland as their closest kin in terms of language. One of the things that interests me about the Faroe Islands is they were linguistically repressed for years and years, for hundreds of years. Danish was the language of law, commerce, church, and education. And their movement of nationalism in the Romantic era, where there was these stirrings of nationhood in places like Germany, where people in Ireland started looking toward ancient Irish myths, and this movement to look for a mythology and language that wasn't European or Latin, but was all their own. The Faroe Islands really took this mantle up, and literature and the act of making art and making music and making poetry became their expression of national identity.
How many speakers worldwide are there of the Faroese language?
It's hard to tell because there are speakers of different competency out there who had some as children but have lived outside the Faroes for so long. But I'd guess between 65 and 70,000. There are 52,000 residents on the Faroe Islands.
What are the predominant forms of poetic traditions? And by this, I mean poetry that has predated this moment, a modern or contemporary moment in literature on the islands.
Central to the Faroese poetic tradition is the long tradition of ballads. In the 1700s, linguist and folklore collectors started looking at Faroese traditional ballads. These ballads they would sing in chain dances, where you take two steps to the left and one step to the right without musical accompaniment, because there was no wood to make instruments from there. And they'd sing these ballads. Sometimes the longest, Ray and Smear, is almost an hour long. And you would hold hands with your neighbor and form a ring, and you'd dance in these halls through the winter nights. These ballads, recorded through oral tradition, stories that would end up in Wagner's Ring Cycle in Germany, they record that same set of material, and they maintained it for 1,000 years in the Faroe Islands, and they still maintain it today. It's a very active part of their culture. Some linguists suggest that in the face of the overwhelming pressure of Denmark and Danish in daily life, the reason Faroese survived as a language is people singing these stories to each other.
How did you take up the language?
In 2011, I went and did a language course. I'd read about the Faroes 6 years before, and I'd seen that they had this language course. It stayed in the back of my head all that time from this little brief encounter on Wikipedia. And that 20-moment period of going down a rabbit hole when I was in college changed the direction of my life 6 years later, when I finally went and fell in love with a place and a people and a poetic tradition and began to get involved in their literature. I did a month-long summer language program and then was invited back to do it next year in exchange for translating a little poetry. They gave me a scholarship, and I've sort of never looked back from that. I've learned a lot of Faroese, but I'm not fluent, and I work with various native partners or other Scandinavian translators to produce the literature you're reading here.
I'm struck by the existential nature of this poem. I find it to be beautiful, but very direct poetic language, with the description of this persona's struggle with the sea, nature, perhaps unnamed forces in nature, which I take as metaphoric for any existential struggle. More of this will make sense when we hear your reading of a fragment of the poem and one in the Faroese language. I mean to say that I find it fully accessible, particularly as it puts forward this dialogue directly with the sea. How is this a contemporary departure from poetic traditions?
Faroese poetry in its modern form flows not only from the ballad tradition, but really from a romantic movement. The romantic movement came in the late 1700s, and I'll just read a little bit of their national anthem. My fairest land, my dearest own, in summer with calm you take me in your tight embrace. So the romantic movement looked to nature as a friend, as a sympathetic witness, as something to mirror humans. This tradition has kept up and continues right into the modern day. If you go back to George Johnson's Rocky Shores anthology that came out in the 70s, which is modern Faroese poetry of his day, a lot of it reads like a slightly more modern version of this national anthem. And if you read a lot of poetry today, it's very much people taking their emotions and sliding them under the landscape so that the landscape can speak through symbols of what they're sort of afraid to say, or couching in symbols instead of direct language. Anamalan has this brutal, direct, simple language. And instead of a sympathetic friend, a sympathetic witness, or a mirror, the sea is an unfriendly, even malevolent force that is luring the narrator to her death.
I see that in the line, the sea is speaking to the persona. Drowning is the calmest of all deaths, the sea told me.
The next page, it was a lie. So, yeah, the sea's for a second pretending to be an answer and sympathetic, but no, it was a lie. As soon as she's in, the narrator is desperately clawing her way back onto the rock, but can't get up, and is eventually drowned and colonized by sea creatures.
This takes me back to the overall concept that lyric poetry would presume that it could find the voice of nature. And as you said, it is sympathetic. It is an ally. And that's not what we're hearing from the sea.
She is upending a tradition, and she's doing it as a in her early 20s. She is shattering centuries of tradition, and I believe she is one of the leading force of a new generation of Faroese writers, predominantly women, moving from a predominantly male scene, predominantly women who are breaking ground on talking about things like mental health, existential issues, things like abuse, drug abuse. People weren't doing this before. When I arrived 10 years ago, this kind of poetry didn't exist in the Faroes.
So I think this would be a good time for our listeners to hear the poem read. And once again, I will wildly encourage our listeners to read this in full. It is an excerpt from a longer poem, I believe. But would you oblige with an English language reading?
I'd be happy to. This is the first section of the book-length poem, Fire Coral. I swear it. If you hold my skull up to your ear, you can hear the whispering sea. The sea. Let my salt air pull you in. I fold my clothes and lay them in a neat pile. Barefoot and rock touch as I walk out to the edge. The sea. Death is as sweet as sugared seaweed. I see how the sea flows like blood, a threading of blue veins beneath white skin. The sea. I swim in you. You must swim in me. Understand, I have to, because my sweat smells like salt. My tears taste like salt, the sea. Listen to my watery sounds, salt blood while my heart beats. I throw myself in now. My body breaks the surface. I drift in the pale blue. Death is beautiful. Fronds of oreweed billow while fingers of kelp caress me tenderly. Then the cold grips my skin. My stomach clenches and the waves toss me against the rocks. Drowning is the calmest of all deaths, the sea told me. It was a lie. Terror-struck, I swim back to land. My nails scratch against stone. I cut my fingers. Blood runs slowly down black rock. I lose my grip. I sink mercilessly farther and farther from the light of the sun. I lie on the seabed, my skin ice white and bruised, eyes staring, empty, blue. I am purple, my blood in the sea, I am purple. Greenish-brown crabs gather, they claw my cold flesh and eat through my chest. Whelks catch my scent, they crawl through my chest, gorging on my livid muscle. I am white, sea slugs slime their way beneath my rim cage. My heart wears its skeleton as a spiraling shell over a slimy skin.
That is beautiful and deeply chilling. Thank you for that.
I just love this. Death is beautiful. Fronds of oreweed billow while fingers of kelp caress me tenderly. For a moment, she pretends to be working with this Faroese tradition of a sympathetic wild. And then she upends everything with the word then. Then the cold grips my skin. And all of a sudden, she's struggling to break free from nature, but she can't.
Well, in a narrative sense, we're going through that traumatic moment with the persona of the poem. This seems to be told in the exact moment that this is occurring.
Yes, it's a very, very immediate poem. And you never get a break from it. The entire book is just this relentless nature assaulting the narrator, but then also there begins a conversation between some of the sea creatures, and it's not any easier for them. They talk about eating each other, what they eat, who eats them, and hiding from storms that sweep down into the seabed. No one escapes.
Exactly. I know this is not a debut poem or story or novel from the author. But is this the first published English translation?
Yes, this is. She's not appeared in English before. She's quite a young writer. She came on the scene, burst onto the scene with a book called The Queen of Psychosis. That's the English title, which is a hybrid novel about mental illness. It's really also very immediate. the excerpts I've looked at, it has these fantastical drawings that are therapeutic drawings. And this is her poetic debut. She just shows up on the scene in her early 20s and completely upends centuries of tradition. It's brave work. It's visionary work. I feel a keen intelligence behind the poetry when I read it and when I work with it.
We are greatly privileged, I think, to have even an excerpt from a longer poem. In a number of pages, how long is this poem in its complete form?
It's not a terribly long poem. Well, what you've heard is probably about a quarter of the book. Every time you see a asterisk on the printed version on the website, that's the page. So one page, it was a lie. That's the whole page. It moves quite quickly. It has some interesting things in the middle of it. A section of the book is an EKG monitor. We had an interesting time translating the little texts and formatting around that. But this book was originally assigned as homework. The section you hear here was assigned to the Translation Institute in 2019. 13 of us gathered speakers of several different languages, Russian, Italian, the Scandinavian languages, and a couple English translators. And we were all tasked to translate it into English. And Luciano Dutra, my co-translator here, who's a very, very gifted Scandinavian speaker. He translates every Scandinavian language. He's a Brazilian living in Iceland, translating to Portuguese. We sat at a cafe and hammered this out, and then we all showed up the next day, and we heard everybody's different version. Luciano and I opted for some really spare, harsh language. Not everybody did that. It was fascinating to hear what everybody came up with.
Amazing. So this was really a legion of translators, perhaps coming to agreement on phrases, words, tone.
We didn't arrive at any consensus on tone. We didn't spend so long with it. The translation exercise was more to get at this important work. The person, Turi Sigurðardóttir, my Faroese mentor in Faroese literature, hosted this session on Faroese literature, and she wanted to get at how Faroese literature was changing and how radical this poem was. And she wanted us to experience the language of it. So we heard from each other, and then Luciano and I decided to take it forward and do the whole book. And in two visits to Iceland on my way to the Faroe Islands over the next few years, once we got a son to bed, we would sit late into the night and debate different kinds of seaweed. And that was really the hardest part of this book, is the seaweed. And we didn't have any final answers on that until I sat down with Anamalan this past summer. And with a small language like Faroese that has names for every kind of local plant, it's very hard to access that as a translator.
So perhaps there might be more than one word for kelp?
Yeah, there's a lot of different kinds of seaweeds in here. And as the book continues, it gets very specific about local Faroese animals and plants in the sea.
I love this idea of seeing it graphically and visually with a full page with a single line with empty space surrounding it, deepening perhaps the emotional experience that you're having of being out at sea.
It's not a long book, but reading the poem is this headlong experience where the short lines keep you turning pages, and it's just this relentless march. I want to say it's a relentless march, but there's these moments that are really quite odd and beautiful where the animals and the sea begin talking to each other midway through the book. It's very strange and moving. And the narrator fades as they're devoured into an inorganic part of the seabed.
Amazing. This is a very contemporary poem, an existential experience. But somehow I can't avoid the connection with the mythology and the legend of the Silky. Can you speak to that?
There's a story, maybe the central myth of the Faroe Islands, the Kopakona. They the seal woman. The very brief version is a farmer hears that seals gather on the night of St. John's Eve beneath the full moon. In Faroese mythology, seals are the entrapped souls of those who've committed suicide by jumping into the sea. He's always heard the story growing up. He's fascinated by it. So he hides behind a rock. He can't help but note that one of the seals people is very beautiful in her human form. So while they're dancing a ring dance on the beach under the light of the full moon, he sneaks out and snags her seal costume. And after that, he's got her in his thrall. Forces her to live on land. In many ways, fire coral could be seen as the opposite. It's the sea luring a person to its depths and her death. Much of the book is the process of her being devoured and colonized by sea creatures. I think that is a story that's present with Faroese people. It's a story, too, that has modern interpretations about women's rights and about Faroese history and the brutality of Vikings seizing people, trafficking them, and bringing them to the Faroe Islands against their will.
The dark history of patriarchy.
The dark history. Yeah, that's right.
Matthew Landrum, I want to thank you for joining us here today. The reading and this deeply evocative and stirring poem, all the insight that you were able to give us about her process and your process in leading the translation team.
Yeah, this is a beautiful poem. I'm really fortunate to have spent some time with it. I'm grateful to my partner, Luciano, and I'm grateful to Anamalan for sitting down with me and helping me with lots of corrections at the coffee shop last summer. When I think about this poem, every poem in translation is also bears the marks of the story of how it was translated. And the central memory for this for me is meeting in November in the Faroe Islands. I'd only been there in August before, and August is glorious. You have light from 4 in the morning until 11:30 at night. But when you get to December and the sun's, or November right before Thanksgiving, the sun sets at 3:30. It wasn't much colder than home, but it still felt oppressive, and the sea went from a sparkling, beautiful, scenic sight to snap photos and get by postcards of to a dark, rolling forest, invisible but heard in the night. We all gathered in the basement of Rancho Roya, this event space in downtown Toshan, and all the translators had translated a section of this into their language and in Russian and Italian and Chinese, English. We all read our sections down the line, 13 translators on stage. This moment of unity and togetherness. Translation's a lonely act, but we got to do this together on stage over this beautiful poem. And out in the distance, as we read about the narrator drowning, we were just 2 blocks away from the harbor and the sea, which sweeps on 220 miles to Shetland.
Thank you again, Matthew Landrum, for bringing to life the poetry of Anamalan Jakvansdottir and for the English translation that you and others contributed to the Asymptote Journal.
Thank you.
To read Fire Coral in the spotlight feature of literature from the Faroe Islands, as well as work from authors representing 32 countries, please visit the Spring 2024 issue, christened The Midnight Garden. And you'll find that issue at asymptotejournal.com. Asymptote is the premier destination for world literature in translation. Thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm Vincent Hostack for the Asymptote Podcast.